Welcome to the Agency in Focus SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Air Force recently gave its wing commanders more decision-making power and more responsibility for their actions. Colonel Thomas Polinsky, commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing, took that instruction to heart. He's made it easier for his airmen to move up faster in the skills ladder while streamlining training requirements. Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni spoke with Polinsky about all of this.
The first memo we did out here, which was actually designed as a piggyback off of General Goldfein's memo reducing additional duties. So the first one we did was we put a team of experts together, and they went through their day-to-day operations to see if they could identify things that were, you know, not as effective as they could be. And they probably worked on it for about 2 or 3 weeks. This is back in February, I think, right after the Wing Commander's course. And the team came together, and they came up with a list of other things that were, you know, maybe not exactly in line with the AFIs that they thought could be done better if we did it a different way. So they outbriefed that to me. And at that point, I said, all those things are approved. Give me a memo, and we'll get after it. But let me back you up one further, if you don't mind me capitalizing on this side of the conversation a little bit. So you asked, what inspired me to do it? And the answer is simple. It's General Goldfein. So you want to hear a story?
Yeah.
All right. So just prior to, just right around January of, like, the year before last, I guess, General Goldfein had his annual Wing Commander's Call in Washington, D.C., where all the wing commanders from all the bases throughout the Air Force got to meet with General Goldfein for about a week, and all the other generals, the functional leaders, A1, A2, you know, personnelists, intel, operations generals in charge of all those actions at the half. And we spent about a week together, and General Goldfein said, hey, you guys need to go out there and lead boldly and get after this stuff. Just before that happened, General Goldfein listed or put out his memo in which he got rid of, and I'm just guessing, I think it was like 88 additional duties, somewhere in that ballpark, aggregated some together. And the story goes like this. So I come back from this wing commander's course, and it was like going to Air Force church. I was fired up. I was filled with the love of the Air Force, ready to get after stuff. And one of the first things that my exec told me is he said, hey, sir, you want to see this email that we got from the Air Force Voters Assistance functional down in AFPC in San Antonio. AFPC is Air Force Personnel Center. And it basically went through and said, hey, to all the voters assistance officers and all the bases throughout the Air Force, we acknowledge that General Goldfein said we're going to do the voters assistance a little bit differently in his memo, but we're not going to do that. We're going to do it this way. And I said, okay, we'll see how that goes. So a buddy of mine, this happened to be General Goldfein's exec, so I got him up on the phone and kind of walked him through this thing. A guy named Dave Wolf, who's a Brigadier General Select now. And he's like, that is not in line with the CSAF's intent. And pushed it back, and they went through and sorted that thing out in the functional change. So what it taught me is General Goldfein, Secretary of the Air Force, as powerful as they are in policy levels, they have a difficult time from their perch driving organizational change throughout the formation. And the reason why it is because the people that are responsible for all these programs in the Air Force are squadron commanders. So every right. single document out there says it's squadron commander's responsibility to make sure that these programs are done right. So what it taught me basically was this. Is that, hey, you know, us senior guys or mid-level to senior guys like me as a wing commander, we can talk all the talk we want and say, hey, we got your back on this. But at the end of the day, if they come through and get an inspection that's not compliant with an AFI, it's the squadron commanders that get in trouble, not Colonel Polinsky. So
right.
That kind of that thought inspired me to go through and draft the first memo, which I'm sure the PA folks can provide to you if you need it for context. But it basically got rid of another, and I'm just making up some numbers here, but probably 300,000 or 400,000 man hours that we deemed were wasted. It also was it took exception. It was not exactly in line with the AFIs, and I went ahead and pulled that risk up to my level and authorized the people to do what they thought was right. And the challenge is this, is the reason why a guy like me or the senior leaders in the Air Force can't knit out the good stuff from the stuff that's not so good in the Air Force is because we're not the folks doing the job day to day. We don't have the granularity in order to, you know, identify stuff that is just not helping out and not meeting the intent of either General Goldfein, you know, Secretary Mattis or Secretary Wilson. It's not meeting their intent to focus on readiness and lethality and the rest of the things. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. It's detracting from it. So what I'm trying to do, and I kind of alluded to it in the email that got pushed out on the Facebook a while back, I basically spent 2 years trying to erode the barrier of trust between the people that do the work and a 31-year colonel that can sign a memo and turn their good ideas into a reality. So that's what I basically say. It sounds like Polensky's, you know, doing crazy stuff out here, you know, making some big waves in the Air Force. Not the intent. The real intent is to set a culture that truly empowers airmen at every single echelon inside our formation, even deeper than squadron commanders. I'm talking about, you know, an A1C or a senior airman that's on the flight line turning wrenches. If they have a good idea, we should be there in order to make their ideas a reality, not an impediment to that, and not leaning on, you know, outdated AFIs from 2007 and say, no, you can't do what you think is right and what I think is also right because this, you know, this 11-year-old AFI says you can't do it. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. Now, when it came to things that you wanted to change, you know, did you have things specifically in mind, or were you hearing things from your airmen and they were like, man, this is really killing me, this, you know, additional duty, this training, those kind of things?
I had absolutely nothing in mind. I'll put it this way. I've not had an original idea in 49 years. all these ideas are literally ideas that were generated from people doing the work. And what they needed is an environment where they could feel like they're safe to voice opposition to some of the things they thought that could be done better in the Air Force. So what we've tried to establish at Hurlburt Field is a place where these folks not only feel empowered to send the ideas up, but they also feel like if they send the ideas up, there's a better than average chance that we're going to let them, you know, we're going to approve that idea and let them get after it. So that's the barrier of trust. So I'll give you another example. So when we worked on the pre-deployment one a while back, the folks that were working on these things, you know, this is the number one most deployed wing in the Air Force. So really the only inspiration I had from that is Facebook, quite honestly. I was actually downrange in Afghanistan, working the fight down there for a few months. And General Mattis, or Secretary Mattis, I'm sorry, put out an article that I saw on Facebook that said he was directing a service-wide review of all pre-deployment requirements. And I thought to myself, hey, General, or Secretary Mattis, hey, the Air Force's most deployed wing can help you out with that. So I just sent down to the guys and shot them that link to that article that General Mattis was quoted in and said, hey, why don't you guys figure out your pre-deployment checklist, pull it out, and start drawing lines through things that you think are not or counterproductive to getting ready to go downrange. I mean, so our folks out here, you know, they deploy, you know, for every 4 months they're downrange, they're only home for about 8 months, and they go back downrange again. So they got it figured out. And they basically took a, you know, pen and lined through, you know, three quarters of the pre-deployment checklist. I looked at it. There's a couple things on there that I had to tweak a little bit. So they didn't get a 100% win on that one from me. Some of them didn't think they wanted to, you know, shoot their weapons or, you know, wear their gas masks as much as they do. And I'm like, no, that is readiness. So you still got to do that. But all the rest of this stuff, I'm like, yeah, as of right now, we're no longer doing that. And the interesting thing, because everybody's like, oh, Colonel Polensky, you're taking a lot of risk. I'm like, okay, maybe, maybe not. The interesting thing that happened was nothing. So the folks at CENTCOM, nobody sent a note back to me from anywhere in the world saying, hey, we really want you to do this particular piece of training. Everybody said, that's a good idea. We're glad that you guys are going down that road. And quite honestly, for the last, well, make it 17 years since it's 2018 now, the checklist for deploying has exponentially grown as, you know, other staffs and functions kept throwing things on the list. But there is no staff or function to take things off the list. So there is no system to pull something off a list. So we just went ahead and take a swipe at it and took a chance, and it seems like it worked out all right. Because now our folks are, you know, that are on their 20th or 25th deployment, they're not doing the same training that they deem in their heart is not helping them become more lethal or more ready. And I agree with them. So I agree with them. All I did, I didn't even write the memos, truth be told. We got execs up here that do most of the writing. I just read it, tweaked it, and signed it. So that was my only contribution. So the fact that I'm getting any credit for this is a little bit out of line. Really, the credit goes to the folks that trusted us enough to do the work and enable us to knit out the wheat from the chaff. That's where the credit goes.
Air Force Colonel Thomas Polensky, commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing, speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. Hear part two of our interview after this quick break. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Creating an open-door policy is easier said than done, especially in the military. Still, it's the kind of atmosphere Air Force Colonel Thomas Polensky, commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing, wants. In part two of our interview with him, Federal News Radio Scott Mossioni asks how Polensky goes about creating a culture where airmen can speak freely to their superiors.
Most of it comes down to repeatedly letting their good ideas move forward. So that's the first step. So you got to, with repetition and with as little micromanagement, with no micromanagement, quite honestly, you know, just a little bit of more experienced oversight. But every time someone comes up to me with a good idea, with an idea, so you want to hear another story?
Yeah.
I like always transmitting my information in parables, if you will. So it probably, as young Captain Polensky, I was the aide-de-camp to the deputy commander of CENTCOM. So he was a 3-star general at the time, General Lance Smith. And we were storming around Iraq right in the middle of when the war wasn't going so great. And we pulled up in a convoy next to this building, jumped out. We took a briefing on a new IED defeating technology. And what it was a generator on wheels that had a big arm sticking out in front of it. And the thing goes at 5 miles an hour, and it kind of shoots electricity in the ground and detonates IEDs before the vehicles get to it. So I got back in the car, and General Smith looked at me and said, "Hey, Tom, what'd you think of that?" And I said, "I think that might be the stupidest thing I ever saw, General." And he looked at me and goes, "That's why you're an idiot." And he said, "Okay, Mr. There's a smart guy, Captain Polensky, with your friend's university degree. Why don't you describe to me what the next evolution of that technology will be? Now, once you did the third evolution, what's it going to grow into?" I'm like, "I don't know, General Smith. The conversation obviously didn't go the way I hoped it would." And he said, "That's why you're an idiot." He goes, "What do you think would have happened if General Smith went to that briefing room and said, 'This is the stupidest thing he's ever seen'?" So we'd have killed that thing right there. So what I tell the guys out here is, from that day on, I'm like, okay, it shifted my perception. Now, anytime anybody tells me anything inside our formation, I always look at them and say, "That sounds like a great idea. We should definitely do it." And then, in my heart, quite honestly, 30% of the time I think they're stupid ideas. But I always tell them, "I think it's a great idea. We should definitely do it." And what I've learned from doing that for the last, 15, 16 years, is that 25% of that 30%, they're all really good ideas. Maybe I was just too thick, my skull's too thick to share the vision of the person pitching it. Maybe the first person pitching it's not a master communicator. I don't know. But if I let them run with it, then only 5% out of that whole 100% turn out to be really bad ideas. And you know what happens to that 5%? Almost 100% of the time, the people that come up with the idea realize it was a bad idea and they quit doing it. Or they change it back. So there's virtually there's a lot more perceived risk in allowing people to get after what they think is right than there is real risk, in my opinion. And the other piece to it is this: hey, the Air Force is the top 1% of America in my mind. The top 1% of Americans that have volunteered to protect the other 99. I think we can trust them to be getting after it for the right reasons. So let's just see what they come up with. That's kind of my philosophy. And I'll give you one last piece if you're talking about establishing a culture. Whenever anybody comes up and tells me bad news, especially if it's bad news, it's their fault, you know what I tell them immediately? I say, "You're forgiven." So I'm trying to drive a culture where nobody hesitates to give bad news or even adverse news anywhere up and down the chain.
Right.
So
right.
In doing that, it opens up the lines of communication so you can help people solve these problems. And a lot of times, the younger folks out there, the young men and women in our formation, they in their heart think this is like the worst thing that they could perceive because they made something not perfect happen. And if you look at those folks and you say, "Hey, we still love you, you're forgiven, let's get after you." And maybe, and quite honestly, 90% of those things, not that big of a deal. From their perspective, it's a huge deal that they made this mistake. From my perspective, it's something that's easily correctable. So why let them beat themselves up over it? Make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to ask about, you've had these three memos now that have come out pretty quickly. What's on the horizon? What are you thinking about now? What's on your mind? And what are you kind of playing around with?
I have absolutely no idea. So, seriously. So let me tell you another story. So a while back, Secretary Wilson came by, and I think it was for the Distinguished Service Cross that we gave to an ST person out here on our base. So as a base commander, I get to meet her and get to see her off and those sort of things. And when I was talking to her, I think it was probably right after maybe the pre-deployment memo came out. And we were kind of talking through those sort of things. And I was kind of looking for her feedback. And you know what she said? She looked me right in the eye and she said, "Don't wait on us." Pretty clear guidance. So when I'm talking to the folks and I go out and talk to large groups of our people in our formation, we got, you know, 5,500 people, so I don't get as much touch time on every single individual as I'd like. But in groups, when I'm talking to them in groups, we always say, "Hey, you know, this is some of the things we've done. What do you guys think we're working on next?" And they're all like, "Oh, I don't know what you're working on next, Colonel P." I'm like, "We're not working on anything because we didn't come up with the first three. You know, all we did is looked around and waited for the people in our formation to come up with the great ideas and gave them the support they needed. So when you ask me what I'm working on next, I'm not working on anything. I'm working on eroding the barrier of trust between the people that do the work and a guy that can sign a memo, and then I'm just going to look on in fascination to see what they bring me next, and then we'll get after that."
Right. You're just listening at this point.
Yeah, reinforcing the culture and then listening to what the great ideas are and getting after it.
That's Air Force Colonel Thomas Polensky, commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing. More of his interview after this break. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Air Force Colonel Thomas Polensky, commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing. He spoke with Federal News Radio Scott Massioni.
Are you seeing any other commanders, any other wings doing what you're doing at this point?
Well, yeah, and funny you should say that, because this gets back to some of the talking points I use when I'm talking to the folks. You know, I talk about the first memo, and then I say, "Hey, when that thing, I think it got pushed out." The first memo, yeah, that's right. So it got leaked out, but it didn't go through the Facebook channels so much as that it got leaked directly to the chief staff of the Air Force. And my buddy, who is his exec, calls me up and says, hey, Tom, the chief of staff's got your first memo there about eliminating additional duties. He wants to send it out to the rest of the wing commanders, you know, on this, you know, email system that they got for us. He goes, are you okay with that? The boss wants to make sure you're okay with it before we, you know, highlight you or, you know, put you on the spotlight. And I said, "Hey, that's great, but you got to give me like 2 hours so I can tell General Webb I did that." I talked to General Webb, and General Webb's awesome. I mean, he empowers his wing commanders as well as any MAGCOM commander I've ever seen. So he said, "Yeah, Tom, I got your back. Just keep rolling." So then the talking point is this: you got any idea how many wings call back into our formation at that POC number and ask for our homework? And the answer is 70. So 70 wings called back and asked for a homework. And we had conversations with, you know, three or four MAGCOMs about the process we use with which to sort through those additional duties and figure out which ones had meat to them and ought to be kept, and which ones were just chaff, you know, were just not useful for anything. And the model that our guy, I didn't come up with this model, it was the CPI Manpower folks in the first sale. They invented an entirely new model, kind of a business evaluation model, cost-benefit analysis type model, and evaluated against a new model they created of their own. So our manpower guys provided that to other folks in the Air Force, which is awesome. So then we did the point I say to my guys, I said, "We'll give you guys the homework. We'll give these 70 wings. We'll give you our homework, but it's not going to help you." Right? And then I talk about the pre-deployment memo. And after we sent that one out, I think it got leaked out through the Airman NCO, senior NCO Facebook site, because I don't push these things out to the public. It just, you know how things are these days. But, you know, after that thing got pushed out through the Airman NCO, senior NCO Facebook site, about another 30, 40, I think it may be up to 50 wings reached back in and said, "Hey, can we get your homework on that?" And I said, "Yeah, we'll give you the homework, but it's not going to help you. Because we're not in the business of generating memos. We're in the business of eroding the barrier of trust between the people that do the work and the leaders, you know, that can sign a memo and make their ideas a reality." And until you work on that, then you can take all the homework and all the good ideas from the other wings you want. But the granularity and the things that are going on in each of these individual wings around the Air Force are different, and the needs of those airmen are different. So until you create a culture where they can get that to you, and you can take a look at it and determine whether you want to take that risk on or not, then all you're doing is stealing somebody's homework.
What have you heard from the airmen now that things have changed? You know, I'm sure you have some stories of, you know, people that have extra time or can do more work or anything like that.
Well, I mean, I was at the dentist's office today, as a matter of fact, and the young lady that was a dental tech working on me, she said, hey, thanks for, you know, reducing all of those CBTs. You know, we basically dread doing those things every year because a few of them, quite honestly, I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to take a look at these things, but a few of these things probably created by well-meaning, well-intended contractors, you know, they probably got a pretty good paycheck out of creating these CBTs. But as I look at them as a 31-year, you know, military officer, my sense is they kind of treat the men and women, you know, the top 1% of America inside our Air Force like children. You know, when you're going around your computer screen trying to earn trophies, you know, or play silly games on things, how about this? Why don't we figure out what they need to know and just teach them that stuff, tell them that stuff, and not make them jump through hoops in a computer thing that kind of treats them like you're playing a kid's video game. Quite honestly, it's a little bit, it certainly goes against my narrative that there are no children inside our Air Force. There's nothing but highly trained, skilled, dedicated men and women, and I think we should treat them like that. So she basically said, you know, thanks for not treating me like a kid. Let me do what I need to do. And I said, that's because you're not a kid. You're a woman, and you're an exceptional woman in the fact that you decided to spend part of your life defending America.
Air Force Colonel Thomas Polensky is commander of the 1st Special Operations Wing, speaking with Federal News Radio Scott Mossioni. Find this entire interview posted at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions, utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.